Hey, this is Nick, your host of the Upgraded Life podcast. And what I have for you on episode 7 is an awesome interview with Alex Van Houten. Alex is a health and fitness coach, and his project is called Defining Dad Bod. Alex is going to break down for us in this episode how hormones impact, yes, women, but also men in the process of bringing children into this world and through the process of raising children. Alex is also going to bring us an awesome mindset upgrade tip at the end of the show as well. And it's going to be specific to folks who are looking to boost their fitness and health. So here is episode 7 of the Upgraded Life podcast with Alex Van Houten. Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life. So for the next hour, you're going to hear a great conversation between me and Alex. And just to kind of give an intro to Alex, who he is and what he's about before we jump into our conversation. So Alex has been in the health and fitness world as a coach for over 14 years. He literally has thousands of clients that he's been able to help improve their own quality of life and quantity of life by supporting their journeys with a balanced approach to the science, how to be practical, and then using that to develop a individualized or personalized approach to life, food, and movement. I haven't personally been a client of Alex's yet, and I do say yet, but I have interacted with people that he has helped, and his ability to impact the lives of people is just tremendous. So this really is an exciting conversation that I got to have with Alex, and I really hope that you, as my listeners, also get the benefit as much as I did. So here we go, my conversation with Alex Van Houten with Defining Dad Bod. All right, I am here with Alex, and I'm super excited to have you on the Upgraded Life podcast. And, you know, we met each other virtually. That's how 2020 works anymore. And just super excited to be able to have you on here and just have a great conversation. And, you know, this podcast is about helping my listeners to upgrade their mindset. And I know what you're going to share in the conversation that we're going to have is going to do that no problem. So, Alex, I'm going to throw it over to you. Tell my listeners who you are and what you do.
How long you got? I'm just kidding. It's super awesome to be here, brother. I appreciate the invite to hop on the Upgraded Life podcast and talk. So my background's kind of eclectic and far-ranging, you know, to keep it in short. I am currently a personal trainer, life coach, and wellness coach of over 13 years. And in my company, Defining Dad Bod, what we do is we help people who have health and fitness goals. That could be body composition, that could be performance-based goals. That for most people, it's how do I make this health and fitness thing possible despite the fact that I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off, I have less than 5 hours a week to devote to that thing. We work to make sure that happens for people. And how I got here actually was I majored in chemical engineering, psychology, and pre-med, which was a lot of fun, by the way, from Vanderbilt University. And as I was studying for the MCAT to go to medical school for orthopedic surgery, my side business, my side hustle at the time was personal training. I'd always been an active guy. Certification, and it was to probably get some credentials so I can actually write programs for people and help people in a safe and effective way. What I found was as I was studying for my MCAT and working in a hospital setting and training people on the side is that doctors really didn't enjoy their jobs in orthopedic surgery. They were being pulled out of like their kids' basketball games to hit the OR for so-and-so who broke their hip in the parking lot. And also there was a lot of changes happening in the insurance world. And so I took a look at that, and then I took a look at the people who were happy to pay me out of their own pockets to keep them from getting on the surgeon's table. And for me, that it was just a no-brainer. I really wanted to be a part of helping people live a higher quality, higher quantity life through effective exercise and nutrition change. And that's a very long story short, but
yeah.
Since then, that's I've been around the block quite a bit. And it's funny, you know, my company is called Defining Dad Bod because of the conversations we have with dads on our podcast. But actually, about 40% of my clientele are women.
Awesome.
In their perimenopausal years, which is a party.
Mm-hmm. All right. Alex, tell me about that time frame when you were contemplating going to med school, orthopedic surgery. When was that?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2010, graduated undergrad in 2010. And then there was a year period between 2010 and 2011 where I was working in the surgical wing of Providence Hospital in Waco, Texas, taking people in and out of surgery. I called myself a hospital taxi, is what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And on the breaks there, I had, you know, I could go over my physics and my chemistry and my math and the preparation for MCAT there. And then I would go train in the gym after work. So 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. was my work schedule. And then I would hit Gold's Gym and the Baylor Student Life Center and train my clients from 4 p.m. usually to 9. And then I wake up and do it all over again.
Wow. Yeah. So that time frame was a downturn in the economy. There was a lot of stuff going on right there. So you might have dodged a bullet there in terms of, you know, what your life could have been. Either way, it's a lot of hard work. And but you actually seeing, you know, with your own eyes what the lived experience was of people in that type of profession, I'm sure that was valuable for you to be able to take it all in.
It was very valuable. You know, when you can ask 20 people who have been there, done that, got mm-hmm. that t-shirt, would you do it over again? Mm-hmm. And only one of them says, yes, I would do that over again.
Wow.
Then it tends to change the way you think about things.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just highlight that point for people. You know, whatever you're considering doing, people like Alex, you'll find this as a common part of their story, right? That whatever you're considering doing, do whatever you can to get involved in that world right away, even if it's just volunteering or whatever it is, because you can then interact with the people who are actually doing the work. And in, for your scenario, 1 out of 20 or whatever it was, I mean, that's not a very good ratio in terms of people who are ultimately happy with the t-shirt, so to speak, that they got. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. So, yeah. I was on a similar track. I was pre-med as well in undergraduate school, but my undergraduate GPA, so to speak, wasn't so hot. So that's not the direction that I went, but all things happen for a reason. And so I jumped into a major of psychology, and the rest is kind of history as far as that goes. But yeah, I mm-hmm. definitely was pre-med. I was headed to dental school. That was what was imprinted on my being at that point in time. So,
well, at this moment, I'm very happy you didn't, because otherwise we wouldn't have a conversation.
Absolutely. So going back to your company name, Defining Dad Bod, what's that all about?
Yeah, so when my son was born, my oldest is 4 and a half now. He's going on 30. When my son was born, was the first time I'd ever personally struggled with my own health and fitness. And, you know, it's hard work. It's hard work to eat well. It's hard work to exercise. It's hard work to get enough sleep and to know the ins and outs and stuff. But, you know, I was a well-schooled individual, and I was coaching clients. And so I didn't feel like there was any big challenge to that. My son was born, and then suddenly I didn't recognize myself. I was the guy going to, I was stopping at the gas station on the way home from work and eating s'mores Pop-Tarts. I was drinking way too many bourbons at night after work. I was craving things I'd never craved before. I was very lethargic. And you know, anybody who's a parent listening to this, they're like, oh man, he was sleep deprived. But when I dove into the research, there was actually a lot more to it than just being sleep deprived. When dads, turns out that mom's body is not the only ones that change when they have kiddos. It's an obvious change, obviously, and there's a lot of things to that. So thank you, moms out there. But dads go through some intense changes themselves as well. And not a lot of people know this, actually. It's a very well-researched phenomenon now, that your testosterone as a man will drop to less than half, plus or minus, when your child's born, and it won't actually recover completely until about age 4, when your youngest is age 4. So if you put multiple children in that line of things, then what you have is a basis for dad bod. A bunch of other things to that and a few other challenges and obstacles. And suddenly you find yourself in a place where a lot of men don't know why they have the dad bod and don't know why their body's not responding to things like it used to. And so that's really where the company name came from, is I found this out for myself. And then as I started, you know, working with guys, because remember, my background in training and even now working with perimenopausal women, I thought, you know, guys who weren't in shape, it's just because you weren't trying hard enough. Had nothing to do with anything. Your hormones aren't nearly as complicated as the female hormonal system. But it turns out there are some intense changes that happen when we have kids and nobody's talking about it. So that's the goal, is to bring awareness and, as you like to say, the mindset and then the movement to the whole arena.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I caught one of your podcasts, well, probably about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, the one that you did with Larry Hagner from the Dad's Edge podcast. And that was where I first got introduced to you. And I got to tell you, I was a little bit skeptical at first when you were the things that you were talking about as far as that goes. But that piece that you just mentioned, I don't think that I heard it before. Like I knew that it was like this parasympathetic response between the male and the mother and the children, and probably evolutionary keeps us from wanting to kill our children, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
Slow down a little bit. But losing half of your testosterone during that for 4 years for the first child, and if you have multiple children, that's an astonishing fact there, because
it is astonishing. And you're a psychology guy, right? And
absolutely.
You know that for men, their serotonin, not only the neurotransmitter itself, but also their receptors of serotonin. And for the listeners, and I'm sure you can explain this better than I, this is your field. Serotonin is largely what we treat with antidepressants. When somebody's feeling, you know, down and out, that's what we, when somebody's prescribed an antidepressant, this is one of the things it's supposed to act on. But testosterone in men largely affects the way serotonin is regulated in them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of guys go through this period of testosterone effects that are the downstream result of that dip. And in the nutrition world, we talk about comfort foods. And the comfort foods are the ones that exogenously increase serotonin and dopamine. And so, like, you know, when you're feeling down, you're not like, man, I really want an avocado. You're hankering for mac and cheese and blueberry muffins, and a bourbon is a good example. You know, alcohol raises both of those levels of neurotransmitter. But anyway, all that to say, testosterone drops, and then a lot of our nutrition habits come to kind of self-medicate a lot of the drop we see in our serotonin as well.
And what kind of symptoms, or what's the experience for a man if they're operating under half their normal testosterone? Like what do they report?
Yeah. So you'll see a huge drop in, from a physical perspective, and the ability to retain muscle tissue. So for a lot of guys, you know, you have a kid and, you know, those first 3, especially 6 months, it's just a big giant wrench in the machine of your life, right? You know, like getting to the gym is almost out of the question for a lot of guys. And it's not like you're very motivated to do so either. So if you're not doing a lot to maintain your muscle tissue and your testosterone drops like that, it's very, very difficult to keep your body holding on to the muscle tissue that you had previously. And that has effects like lowering your overall metabolic rate. That would mean the amount of calories you need in a day in order to maintain a good, healthy body weight for yourself. And then similarly, the drop in testosterone, there's mental effects to this too. And I'm sure, again, you could speak to this better than I, but one of the things that men commonly report, in addition to lowered motivational levels or lowered libido, is actually a disinterest in their daily life activities and or a feeling that you are not yourself. And that's twofold in testosterone. So I'll repeat that. A disinterest in the things that usually make you happy. But then also the feeling that you are not yourself. Like, I, Alex, standing here right now, just don't feel like me. It's not who I'm used to me being. It would be the common feeling across mm-hmm. men when your testosterone takes a dive like that.
Wow. That's huge. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, from the counseling mental health world, you know, it's the standard that we stay out of the medical stuff. Right. And so, mm-hmm. so the field of psychology and psychiatry, they don't really get along like what most people think about. So some of this is new for me in terms of, thinking about it from a mental health perspective, you know, the role that hormones play in somebody's mental health really isn't something that's covered in very much detail. And I say that, you know, my PhD is in counselor education and supervision. And so because of that discipline, you know, I am responsible for knowing all of the core competence for counseling. And I can tell you for a fact that the role of hormones and how they impact somebody's overall being and mental health is not part of the training that the standard counselor in the mental health world is getting, right? And mm-hmm. so this is really important information as far as that goes. I usually kid new parents, new fathers when they have a question about this. I say, well, just turn in the manual that you got, right? It's on page 83 right there. It's going to talk about all this, right? And of course, there is no manual, right? But if there was a manual, this would be, you know, a whole chapter at least, right? Is, you know, what is your body? Yes, mom, right? What is there's a chapter for you, but there's also a chapter for dad, right? Around this is what your body is going to go through by nature of being a father, right? And I think that that's not common knowledge, right? So I really appreciate you expanding upon that because I think it's huge, right? And just for a lot of people, just knowing that, oh, this is what happens. Right?
I have. And when you start talking to dads about this, you watch like their eyes light up and buzzers start going off. Like what, like how do you know what I went through? Like, how are you saying exactly the things that I went through when my child was born? And it does two things. One, it makes you as a father feel a little less alone about the experience because a lot of guys aren't talking about this stuff. You know, they're not maybe even their spouses, but much less their fellow guy friends about how this played out in their lives. But secondly, if you understand something, you begin to liberate yourself from it, which means if I understand that there's a biological mechanism at play here, then I can start to decide what I'm going to do about that. I can start to decide how I might enhance some biological functions that help me during this time. I might be able to accept things a little bit better when I know it's not all in my head and other guys are going through this too. And it's really powerful for people to understand, guys specifically, to understand what's going on when their kiddos are born.
And I think there's a relational impact there too, right? Because again, I'm going to just keep anchoring on this hat here, operating under half your testosterone, right? And you said that men don't feel like themselves anymore and they don't have the same interests that they used to do. Well, their partners are going to recognize that. They're going to see that. Who is this person? What's wrong with you? Why can't you help me with this and whatnot? And so I think it has a relational impact too, that if your partner can also have this information and realize that it may not be you just, you know, being a jerk, right? That you're going through something physiological as well, that can go a long ways too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very important.
Yeah. And I, you know, I work with a lot of guys and men and fathers that are going through this phase of their life with raising young children, and there is no manual, right? And oftentimes because of lone wolf syndrome, right? We're not asking for help. We're not batting things off of, you know, other men that have been there, done that. We have our own t-shirt, right? I survived the early childhood years. And
that's right.
Look at my dad bod. And, that, you know, they just don't know what that's all about, right? And so being able to share that information is going to be huge. Have you had a chance of doing much preventative work on that? Like, you know, as a dad is about to become a father, do you get to do some preventative work there?
That's a good question. You know, it's twofold. First of all, a lot of young men who don't have kids think, you know, maybe they want kids in the future, but it's really far in the future for them. their health and fitness. They might not know this, but studies have shown, mm-hmm. especially in epigenetics, that mm-hmm. their health and fitness can affect mm-hmm. their progeny in the future. Yeah. For instance, we've seen that healthy and fit fathers actually give birth to more insulin sensitive children. It's really interesting. That means you can change your child's carbohydrate regulation for the rest of their life by being in good shape when you do, you know, decide to join the gene pool, so to speak. So that being said, that's one thing from a prevention perspective. But two, I had the opportunity relatively recently, to experiment on myself because my oldest is 4.5. My youngest is 1 year old. And so I got to learn all this stuff. And then we had baby number 2 on the way. And it was like, okay, how can I handle this better, given all of the things that I've learned and the things that I've helped other dads with? How can I handle this better than I did with our first kiddo? Mm-hmm. And so, there's a level of prevention, but it has a little less to do with your biological body. There's a lot of things you can do for that, but two, it's managing the environment of the post baby world, so to speak, to bolster and make the best out of what's likely going to be that testosterone drop for you. So as a little background, when my first son was born, my free testosterone dropped into the 300s. I was 24 years old. Dropped into the 300s and didn't actually come back to normal 24-year-old, 25-year-old numbers until about the 3rd year for me. So I beat the curve a little bit. Wow. Now, when my second son was born, my testosterone was back to 700 by the 5th month. So we got somewhere there. And obviously this is an N=1 anecdotal situation. Sure. A lot of my guy clients have shown increases in testosterone, you know, following these methods and programs and stuff. But that being said, for me, I was pretty happy with that. I had a much better experience. Things were much more smooth with the wife, and we learned a lot from the first one. So mm-hmm. Poor guy had to break us in easy. But that being said, there's a lot of things that a guy can do to support healthy dopamine and serotonin neurotransmitters, to support a better bounce back for cortisol, the resilience of getting little sleep. And then also you're not going to have your pre-baby testosterone within a couple weeks, but you can help that process and the reserves of your body pull that back and make the most out of the testosterone you do have.
Yeah. Awesome. So I'm going to latch on to something you just said there, N=1. So I'm going to geek out on that a little bit.
Let's
right?
do it.
And so, and this is a serious question to you as a coach too, Alex. So I was recently, probably like in the last, I don't know, 8-9 months, exposed to the idea that so much of the decision-making that we do is driven by the average, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we're talking bell curve, you know, we're looking at one standard deviation one way or the other is what we get told as was what's good for everybody, right? That comes down to the medications that we take, to the food that we eat, to the amount of exercise that we need. It's all driven by mean, median, and mode, the average. But what we don't spend a ton of time on as individuals is to what extent do I as an individual actually represent the average, right? And so as a coach, I'm curious to you, Alex, about your experience, the people that have come to you for help, how much of their experience has been, look, Alex, I've been doing everything that I've been told to do, right? And it's just not having the impact. And then it takes somebody like you to really look at that person as an individual and look at what their specific needs are. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but you may be kind of deviating or tweaking what the standard formula is, so to speak, for what works for the average person. Does that make sense? Or what's your experience with that?
100%. Yeah. Like at least all but maybe 3 clients in 13 years have come to my consultations. And the rest of they've said, oh, okay, everything's normal for me. I just need somebody to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. That's like 3 clients in 13 years. And I've worked with thousands of people, and the same story. And I don't, you know, it's kind of ironic. We're going to talk about N=1, but here's something that's pretty common among everybody who represents the individual is that I don't know what it is, but I don't follow my body doesn't fit the mold of the cookie cutter program. I've counted my calories. I've done the keto thing. I've done the low carb thing. I've done the P90X or whatever. And for whatever reason, I just, it's not working for me. And we can dive into that. We can decide whether or not the program wasn't necessarily catered to the goal they thought they were trying to work toward or something, or maybe their compliance was low, or maybe they literally did everything they were supposed to do and their microbiome and their genetic makeup literally hate everything they were supposed to do. And so it didn't work out well for them. Right. So my experience as a coach in that sense is each one of us has a very, and I'm speaking physically here, you could expand this to psychologically, socially, spiritually, but each one of us has a unique blueprint in terms of the genetics that make us up, in terms of the physical history of what we've done with those genes and perhaps what's been done to us. And then three, the microbiome, the actual bacterial colonies that are in and on you, which are their own little fingerprint. And so everybody knows the idea of a fingerprint. Your fingerprint's unique, though you share 99.99% of your genes with every other human, right? The same thing is true about you and your physical makeup, what makes you up and what works for you and whatnot. And that's not even getting into the psychology of things. So it's a challenge, man. You bring it up because you learn the science, but the science is about the averages, the failure to reject the null hypothesis, as we say in research, right? Mm-hmm. However, the people who generally are coming to me in my practice for help are the ones that the average didn't work for them. Mm-hmm. And that's important. It's important to say, hey, man, I'm right there with you. I'm an N equals one myself. I tend not to fit the mold as well as I would like to. And so what we have to do from that point is we have to find what's important to you, what resources are you working with, and how can we manifest your best? How can we bring out that potential in you through nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise?
You're absolutely. And, you know, my research was, you know, based on an N of 3. And so learning how to do small sample research and do it to a way that meets muster for, you know, statistical significance is something that's in my wheelhouse and whatnot. And being able to measure the specific impact of your intervention as an individual clinician is really kind of the angle that was taken there. And part of that, you know, again, we're geeking out on N equals 1, right? And so, random control trials as being the gold standard, right? There's a lot of people that have kind of peeled back the curtain on that, right? And at least in the mental health world, when you're looking at a random controlled trial for something like, name any one medication, well, you know, the criterion to fit people into that random controlled trial does not mirror the average person's life, right? And so, like, for example, if this is a medication to treat depression, well, you can't have anything else going on in your life. You can't also be an addict. You can't also, be unemployed, whatever these other major lives, you just have to be, moderately to mildly depressed, right? And those aren't the people that come through my door, right, in terms of needing help and whatnot. They're multi-factored type people, right? And so even in RCTs, you really have to look at what the population was and really kind of what the impact. So, I'm not afraid of N equals 1 as long as the research was done well.
True story. And in my world, the other thing that I'd like to bring up here is that the duration of certain studies really affects outcomes, right? So it's not just the type of people coming in and what the intervention actually was. I'll give you, for instance, and I don't mean to fixate on testosterone, but we were there, so why not?
Absolutely.
One really interesting study, actually two interesting studies, if you put them side by side, looked at intermittent fasting on resistance-trained males and whether or not it had an effect on testosterone. In a 4-week trial, they found that intermittent fasting actually boosted testosterone and increased the amount of fat that was utilized during that time. So these people had higher testosterone by the end of it. And by people, they were ages 20 to 25. Okay, that's a great time to boost testosterone, right? You have plenty of it. So your testosterone goes up, your actual fat percentage, your body fat percentage goes down, win-win for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And so what people take away from this is, I want to improve my testosterone and I want to lose some fat, I should do intermittent fasting. Well, if you look at a sister study, that was an 8-week study on exactly the same effect, on exactly the same demographic. What they found in the 8-week study is that while the fat loss was maintained, the actual testosterone decreased significantly in the intermittent fasting group versus the control group. And so what it turns out to be is that intermittent fasting could be a powerful way to elevate testosterone in young males if done for a short period of time, but not very helpful for the long term. And so I work with guys who are like, yeah, I've been, you know, doing the one meal a day thing for about a year now, and it worked for a little while, but then it didn't. And, you know, you kind of talk through that. You're like, oh, well, let's talk about where the research has you know, been lost on you at this point. Mm-hmm. So, and that's really powerful, because when we talk about health and fitness, the number one thing we ask often in my consultations is this goal a 4-week benchmark, or is this goal something we're talking about changing for the long haul, something that next year you're not even worried about because you're moving on to the next thing? Because if it's a long-term thing, our approach is going to be very different than if you just have a wedding coming up in 3 weeks and you sure. have to, you know, stand in a bridesmaid's dress.
Absolutely. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. So Alex, I want to go back to you specifically. Tell me what your path was, what your experience was in becoming the coach that you are now. What was that like day one? Were there phases? What were the struggles? What were the hurdles that you had to overcome to be who you are today?
Good question, man. You know, when I started coaching, you know, training, I don't think I could call it coaching. I was training. I was creating workouts and leading people through them, and, you know, making sure their form was appropriate and that sort of thing. I was teaching people how to do great push-ups and sprint harder, right? Burn more calories. Mm-hmm. So that's where I started in coaching. And young Alex was there because he loved physical fitness and he enjoyed what it did for him, and other people asked him for help pretty regularly, you know, because he was sporting 6-pack abs at the pool. And so that's nice and easy, right? Easy marketing. But from there, as I grew as a trainer, every trainer starts out wanting to train athletes to be better athletes. And what my passion came out to be was that I really cared about helping the person who was just beyond what, I don't know, the average gym goer could do, because they had obstacles. They had injuries they were working with. They were traveling all the time. Maybe they hated protein shakes or whatever. I liked having problems to solve for people. And that might be my chemical engineering, that when you actually have a problem to solve, that might be a higher paid demographic. I'm not sure. Either way, I liked having problems to solve for people. And so what I would do is, in the gym settings that I worked in, I would find the people who had worked with a trainer and for whatever reason didn't get their results the way they wanted. And I would connect with them and say, what happened? What was the miss? Let me see if I can help you. And I would give them a week of my time to see if I could come up with a better solution for one of the things that they were wrestling with. And that approach led me to what I think is probably the most difficult group of people to help get great results, which is the perimenopausal ladies. If you're a lady listening to this and you've gone through menopause, then you know what I'm about to say is very true. It's the hardest time in a woman's life. And so their hormones are all over the map, and it's not really their fault so much. It's that their ovaries have decided to start sputtering and it's putting out strange mixtures of different hormones their body's never dealt with before, right? So I found myself there, and I had to rapidly educate myself on how this works. Turns out you would think, and in 2020 we would know a lot about perimenopause, kind of like we would know a lot about what happens to dads after their babies are born, but we don't know a whole lot about it. We know some of the numbers, and we know some of the fluctuations, and we know some of the symptoms, but we're still trying to get a good handle on that. And so I really enjoyed that there was research, but there wasn't a lot of it, and there were a lot of those N equals one moments where it's like, you should be responding this way, but that's not where we're at right now. And so we're going to focus on the things we can control and work to improve those things. And so kind of wrapped up in that chapter was my diagnosis of Ehlers-Danlos, which is a deficiency in your ability to synthesize collagen. So in layman's terms, my tendons and ligaments should be built like Kevlar to hold my joints together, but they're more like gummy bears. And so a lot of things in my life kind of fell together, digestive issues and injuries that shouldn't have happened, but did happen. And all of those things kind of came together there. And so it was nice because for me, it was difficult, but a lot of the things that I'd used to improve my health and fitness with an untreatable chronic disease was the processes that I was able to help other people to deal with things that seemed to be happening to them rather than things that they had done to themselves, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Can I ask you a little bit about what your initial response was to that diagnosis? What did you go through in your headspace there?
Yeah, denial, hardcore. I was in hardcore denial. I had been injured through the injury cycle so many times in my life. And it wasn't like this 18-year-old kid thinks he can do a power clean at 400 pounds and he doesn't have the training. It's like I would sprain my ankle making my bed. I could deadlift 400 pounds in the gym, but I couldn't make my bed without getting injured. You know, it was a very weird dichotomy that the way this whole thing came about, but it came about because of a injury I had climbing. I dislocated an ankle and received the diagnosis after, because dislocated ankle usually break bones. Mm-hmm. Mine didn't break. Apparently my stretchy, it just stretched. And then I, you know, popped it back in and, you know, had a really, really rough recovery from a grade 3 sprain, but there were no broken bones. Right. So for me, it was about 3 years of, you know, I'm busy. I got a lot going on. I can't really deal with this right now. I'm just going to, maybe that's a thing. Maybe that's something I'll have to deal with in my future. But after my sons were born, my first son, and then followed closely by my second, I think the transformation was saying, this isn't going anywhere. I might have passed it on to them because it's a genetic issue. I need to get it on my medical record. I need to learn how to handle it really well. I need to get in communities where they're dealing with this thing well. And so it was the acceptance of the diagnosis and then the decision to bear that cross well. And it's a journey for sure. It's something I'll have to wrestle with my entire life, but no longer denial, that's for sure.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that with me. Alex, how do you define mindset?
That's a good question. I think the best definition of mindset I could come up with on the spot is the mental space that you occupy to take on your day. Hmm. And that would be the best I could come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I'm not 100% solidified on my definition of mindset, but for now, I think about it as a set of minds, and I see a craftsman toolbox. Sorry for the other tool brand fans, but that's just what comes to my mind. And so your aspect of, you know, whatever you need to address the day, right? Well, every day can be a little bit different, right? So if your day is, I got to go buy a car, right? And I know that I got to do that. Well, it's going to take a little bit different mindset for that. If your day is going to work as normal, well, then you have a mindset for that. If your day is, I got to go to parent teacher conferences, right? Well, there's a mindset for that as well. So that's where I'm kind of at this point in time in terms of seeing mindset as a tool chest, and inside the tool chest are, you know, various tools. And depending on what your day holds, you may or may not have the tool for it, right? And it's important to recognize that. Or you may have to improvise, or you may have to get some training or learning. And so that's how I see mindset. And so my next question for you, Alex, is how do you see mindset being at play, if at all, with your coaching clients? Like, what do you see from them when they're coming to you for help?
Yeah, there's a number of paths I guess we could walk down this way. I think the most important one to me is the periodization of training, which is a really fancy way of saying that there are times in your life where you have more bandwidth for higher volume, higher intensity in your exercise, a little more focus and a little more discipline around your nutrition, a little more flexibility and control around the environments that you're in. So the periodization of training says that we're going to work with that time to maximize your results during that time. Mm-hmm. But then there's a different mindset for, let's say, the holidays or a particularly busy season at work, or a vacation might be a good time to think about that as well. And the mindset shifts, the periodization model shifts so that you're kind of in a maintenance or a homeostasis phase, mm-hmm. where you're still doing the things that are good for you. You're still eating well. You're still exercising. You're still working to get enough rest. You're still taking your multivitamin, for instance, but you're not super gung-ho about what you're doing. It doesn't have to be dialed in and disciplined. It's hey, my fitness needs to take a backseat to a few things right now, but I don't need to fall off the wagon. Mm-hmm. And so when you understand your health and fitness in terms of a long-term journey, the bandwidth that you have at different times will change the mindset you have, mm-hmm. toward your exercise, nutrition, and lifestyle.
Yeah. So what I heard,
and I think my clients, a very big like sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Your clients what?
So for my clients, a light bulb goes off when we talk through a long-term vision of what we're aiming for, knowing that there are going to be ebbs and flows along that path, as opposed to, in my purview, the fitness industry is rife with, we have 30 days, let's see how much progress we can make in 30 days, you know, and who the hell cares what happens after that? Mm-hmm. It's a different approach. It's a different understanding, a different mindset, if you will, about how we integrate our health and fitness, mm-hmm. practice with our everyday life.
So let me throw something out there and see if I am catching on to something that you said but didn't say. Do you find yourself having to overcome that, hey, I need results, Alex, from you in 30 or 90 days, you know, help me get there? By the way, none of this has worked yet, but I know that you can help me get there. Is that a kind of a limiting belief that you're trying to help people overcome that and take the long approach to this?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. Something that I've taught coaches that I've mentored in this space to do is to don't pop anybody's bubble, mm-hmm. but put their expectations in the context of their larger goals. Mm-hmm. Right. So I ask people when they first come to me, describe to me your health and fitness heaven and your health and fitness hell. Mm-hmm. And I want you to take time to think about that. If you did everything right, mm-hmm. over the next year, what's that heaven look like, mm-hmm. to you? And if you did everything wrong, like all of your bad habits got the better of you and you did nothing about it, mm-hmm. what does that hell look like? Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I ask is are there any important benchmarks along the way? And so if you help people understand that their short-term goals aren't stupid, they're part of a larger picture, they're part of benchmarks and an important understanding of their long-term desires for themselves, then in that sense, there aren't many obstacles for me to overcome except to help them understand. There are different approaches we take to short-term benchmarks, mm-hmm. and there are different approaches we take to long-term goals. And they can be together. They're not mutually exclusive. They can be synergistic. But just understand that they are a benchmark on a journey, not I'm going to fix all my health and fitness problems in 30 days, and you're the guy to get me there, right? It's like, no, we can get you looking a little better than you do right now in those bridesmaids pictures, right? But in the larger view of you being a healthy mom and a fitter husband and standing in front of your workplace commanding some respect and attention because of the confidence you have in your own body and in your own practices daily, that's the bridesmaids thing or the wedding thing. It's just a benchmark. Much, much longer term journey, right?
Absolutely. I think that was, you said that beautifully. That's a question that I would ask in the counseling world too. When I would take on a new patient, you know, I would say something to the effect of, you know, what's worked for you in the past and what's not worked, and let's work together to make sure that this experience is exactly what you're hoping for versus me trying to do the same things with you that hasn't worked for you in the past. Right. So I like that. Mm-hmm. Describe your heaven, describe your hell in terms of fitness and nutrition. I think that's a beautiful question that you use. And so for those of you that are aspiring coaches, there's a huge tip there, right? Don't pop somebody's bubble. Right. And the more that you can align with what their vision is, the better off you're going to be in terms of your collaboration and overall goals, right? And so helping somebody, you know, articulate their vision is a huge part. And sometimes people don't have a vision, right? And so they need to build that from the ground up as far as that goes. So I noticed that my little timer here has stopped, so I'm a little bit off track, but we'll get back on, Alex, no problem. In terms of
no worries.
Yeah, in terms of dad bod, are there some kind of high level things that, you know, across your clients typically are the steps or the benchmarks that seem to be applicable across most cases? Have you made observation of those? What would you say to that? What are the typical steps to stepping out of dad bod?
Yeah, I wish there was something really sexy and eye-catching I could say here, but really, don't knock what I'm about to say until you try it, dad bods out there. If you're making in defining your own body and you're working on creating something that can stand for something bigger than you, that's what the defining dad bod mantra is becoming 1% better every single day for something more than yourself. If that's what you're doing, then one of the most important things across your life that you can do right now is start to become aware of everything you put in your face. Write it down, journal it, categorize it. I don't mean become a weird calorie counting person who has to, you know, measure every tablespoon of flaxseed. I'm saying that if you bring your conscious awareness to the food that's coming in your face and you start journaling that, it will change. It will change so many things for you within just a couple weeks. In fact, for some guys, when I first start working with people, I do a 1 week trial. We do a consultative thing and everybody's like, oh, send me a meal plan. Tell me what to eat. How many calories should I be eating? I'm like, look, we're just getting to know each other. All right. What I want you to do is I want you to record your food every single day. Once you record use MyFitnessPal, use Lose It, I don't care what app you use, record your food, and then send it to me at the end of every day. I'm not going to give you any advice. I'm not going to judge you for what you send me. I'm just going to say, good job journaling. Well done. And then by the end of this week, we might notice some trends that we can improve on, right? And we can talk through those together. But that being said, I'll ask people at the end of this week, what did you learn? What was different? And they'll say, wow, I didn't realize I was doing X, Y, Z. And it's crazy because they think they're coming to me for some magical nutritional silver bullet that's going to change everything for them. When for many people, just becoming aware of what they're actually doing, they already know several tools that would help them. They already know several changes that would help them. And don't get me wrong, like there's plenty of misinformation out in the world about nutrition, and so it's helpful to educate appropriately given people's assumptions. But I'd say that's step one, man. For many dads, we feed our kids, we work hard, we try to be there for our wives. If we're lucky, we get to work out regularly. Maybe we get enough sleep. But when was the last time you were aware of what the heck you ate in the last week? Most guys aren't. Most guys are kind of going from day to day, feeling a little guilty about that thing, not really sure about this thing, and shoveling food in your face at 12 because this is the only hour you have to eat between this thing and that thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you're kind of mindlessly going through that that piece, and you're gonna eat more times than you have sex in your life. You're gonna eat more times than you sleep in your life. You're gonna eat more times than you high five your kid in your life. But it's something that that would be really helpful to make sure is on board for health and fitness, is being aware of the foods that are going in your face and making some conscious decisions about what you want that to look like over your life.
Wow. Yeah. And that's actually, again, another powerful intervention that we use in the mental health world as well, for people that are struggling with, you know, problematic emotions or maybe self-harm, is having them, you know, do a diary card straight from, you know, DBT, and just having them track, you know, the times when they felt a certain way, and being able to recognize patterns, being able to link that to certain interactions or certain times of the day, is huge. And just, and I don't know what you see in your world in terms of the research, but in our world, just the activity of journaling it can help, you know, improve the scenario, no matter what it is with the problematic emotion. Just the act of journaling it, because like you said, it's a discipline of bringing it to your awareness. You're moving it from something that you're just unconsciously doing and bringing it to the conscious, and then, wow, maybe I can do something different there, or I didn't know that. So it's the overlap is just killing me in terms of things that we know to work in both worlds there.
yeah, absolutely.
Any thoughts about that in your response?
The only other thing I would say there is when it comes to journaling, and I could talk to you about this for a long time outside of just journaling, but for dad specifically, when we think of what we should be eating to, you know, let's say decrease our fat mass or increase our muscle mass, everybody wants to talk about calories or even macros, mm-hmm. if we're getting a little more ninja about those mm-hmm. things. What I encourage dads to think about is that 3 to 5 years from now, especially as your kids are growing, your body is going to be the result of the quality of the food that you put in your mm-hmm. face. And you yourself are more than calories, like you need to measure in question. If I'm talking to a dad, I'm like, look, you want your testosterone in a great place. You want your musculature to be manifesting your athletic potential. You want your fat mass low and stuff. Our goal in the long term is to build the best you can. Mm-hmm. And what your body does is very different from your car. You don't just burn gas like to get from one place to another, because
yeah.
your car does that. And when your car, you know, craps out on you, you just replace it or build a better engine or something like that. Your body actually takes the fuel that you feed it and builds itself out of that fuel. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the food that you're eating on a regular basis, the question is, do I want to be made out of potato chips and bourbon and brownies and, you know, microwave pizza? Who cares if it's cauliflower crust or not? You saved a few carbs. Like, is that what you really want to be built out of? And then you start making larger decisions about, you know, 80 to 90% of the rest of the nutrition in your life. Hopefully that will be positive and powerful and build a great version of you. And don't get me wrong, French toast on Friday mornings with your kids is fan-freaking-tastic, but that shouldn't be breakfast every day, right? And so you get into the nuances there as well, but I hope people are hearing you journal your food to become aware of what it is that you get to eat from here on out.
Absolutely. That's a powerful tip. And that's what I like to provide here, something that people could actually practically do as soon as the podcast is done. So I think you've just done that, right? Just starting with basic awareness, and whether it's a handwritten journal or if you're using an app, that's a place to start. And it's also going to save you time if you are going to ever seek professional help, right? You know, imagine what it would be like for you, Alex, if you got a new client, maybe somebody from this podcast, and said, hey, I've journaled a whole month, right? That would save tremendous time with you. I mean, you could start.
Amazing time. Yeah. We can get immediately started on your nutrition goals. Right. I can go, oh, you've gathered all the data for me. Fantastic.
Absolutely. And whether you're going to your doctor or nutritionist or whatever, that should be, you know, valuable data. And it's something that you could do right now. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. As we close out, Alex, what would be a message that you would have for both men and women? And we've talked about, you know, dads in that stage of being new dads, right? And then we've talked a lot about paramenopausal women. You know, what would be your your you know, concise word of encouragement for both of those types of people?
Great question. If you're listening to this, the one thing I hope you hear from me today is that it's not about being in perfect health or perfect fitness and having the Instagram abs and the split biceps or whatever it is that you're trying to get after. The goal is to manifest a 1% better version of you every day. Your genetics, your environment, the things you eat, how you exercise, kind of person you get to be to your spouse and your kids and your workplace because of it. 1% better every day. You work on that, and 3 years from now, you won't even recognize yourself in the mirror, and other people will want what you're having.
Absolutely, I love that. And then, would you say the same thing for women?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
100%.
Great. I'm a big fan of 1% better every day, and comparing yourself only to yourself, right? Because that's all that really matters in this world. Alex, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Upgraded Life podcast. It was a fun conversation. Hopefully we can do it again. I definitely enjoyed myself, and I know that the people that are tuning into this episode are going to get a ton out of it, ton of value, and appreciate you and all that you do and just taking the time for this.
Thanks, Dr. Sotelo. I'm really looking forward to sharing this out to as many people as possible. I think it was a great talk.
Appreciate it. All right, Alex, take care.
Wow, I just love that conversation that I had with Alex. For those of you that are listening, if you want to connect with Alex, I'll put all that good stuff in the show notes so that you can get the best way to get in touch with him. The website for Defining Dad Bod is just how it sounds, www.definingdadbod.com. So if you head it over to that website, you're going to see his podcast and you're going to find several ways to contact and connect with him. He does offer a variety of programs and approaches to work with people. And obviously he can do it virtually online as well. So if you're not in the same location as him, no worries. He's got you covered there as well. To close this episode, I just want to reinforce the mindset upgrade tip that Alex brought to us in this show. In the simple discipline and habit of just tracking what you eat. No harm, no foul, no guilt, no shame, but literally just write down what you eat and when you eat it and about how much of it you ate. And there's power in that as well, because if you can externalize that eating experience onto pen and paper, or if you're going to use technology to log it in, but just being able to externalize it, get it out in front of you and look at it, will give you the beginnings of how to take power and control over that aspect of your life. It's a huge, huge tip, and I'm super glad that Alex brought to us. To close, I just want to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast, to take in the Upgraded Life. It really means a lot to me. And more than anything is I do this because I want to impact the lives and anybody that's willing to take the risk. And upgrading your life, embracing the Upgraded Life, it can be risky at times. And I want to say for those that are listening, good on you for using an hour of your time to do something to better yourself. So this is Dr. Nick Sotelo, wishing you all well, and we'll catch you on the next episode.